with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day.
Woohoo! It's finally here, a legit education resource designed for advanced practice providers. Yes, PAs, NPs, we've got you something just for you. Welcome to Dominate Surgery for APPs. This is a modern and engaging resource designed to teach APPs the art and the science of surgery. We go beyond rote memorization and focus on your performance. Learn how to present a consult, drive camera, tie a one-handed knot, and first assist in the OR. Dominate Surgery has it all. Concise text, custom illustrations, high-yield flashcards, super useful audio, and professional-grade video, all accessible on our app. The content really is good. It's useful, it's engaging, and it will make you better. Today, we have a podcast from our Dominate Surgery APP Master Educators. This crew is top-notch, and we know you're going to enjoy it. Remember, this is just a tiny fraction of the content from Dominate Surgery. With that, dominate the day.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Knife and this podcast in our series for advanced practice providers. I'm Michael Johnson, a neurosurgery PA and PA educator at the George Washington University PA program. Today, we're diving into a hot topic in the world of APP education and training. So imagine this. You're a PA student and getting close to graduating. You love your surgery clerkship and you are confident that you want to work in surgery after graduation. You're starting to look around at jobs and the market seems tight, especially for new grads, and most of the postings you see in surgery require at least 1 year of experience. You also feel like your skills aren't quite as sharp as they could be. You dominated your surgery clerkship, but it was only 4 weeks, and you feel like your skills could use a boost. What about a postgraduate residency? An intensive program that provides training and education and develops the clinical skills you will need to be a terrific and well-rounded surgical PA. There's a lot to consider about postgraduate fellowships and residencies for both physician assistants and nurse practitioners. Are these programs worth the time, the effort, the financial trade-offs? We'll discuss the background and many benefits, drawbacks, and everything in between today. Joining me are three distinguished guests who have a wide range of clinical, administrative, and educational experiences and can offer unique perspectives in this discussion. First, we have Kim Howard, who is a thoracic surgery PA and PA educator at the Duke University PA program, where she oversees the surgical curriculum. Thanks for joining us, Kim.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. Next, we have John Messing, who's a trauma nurse practitioner who previously founded and directed a trauma and critical care APP fellowship and is currently the APP Surgical Service Line Director at the Inova Health System in Northern Virginia. John, thanks for joining the podcast.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Mike.
And last, we have Hannah Horn, an experienced surgical PA and the colorectal APP manager at the Cleveland Clinic.
Hi, Mike. Excited to join today to discuss this topic.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Let's get started. So a little background. What are residencies and fellowship, and really what's the difference? What we're talking about in most cases are postgraduate clinical training programs that provide structured, hands-on experience in specialized fields. The word residency and fellowship have often been used somewhat interchangeably in describing these kind of training programs. About 60% of programs who responded to one survey called the trainees fellows, but it may be the case that the organization is grant-funded and it requires the trainees to be called residents. Currently, particularly with current efforts to standardize some things, residency may be the more appropriate description. Much like the PA profession itself, the concept of postgraduate education grew out of need. In the early 1970s, there was a need for more highly trained surgical PAs to work alongside with physicians and residents to care for the growing number of patients. The first PA residency was established at the Montefiore Medical Center in affiliation with the Albert Einstein School of Medicine in 1971 to increase the number of house staff. In 1976, Norwalk Hospital, in cooperation with the Yale School of Medicine, established the second surgical residency.
This program was and remains unique in that PA residents are the primary house staff instead of supplementing the number of physician trainees. The number of residencies available to physician assistants increased over the following decades, as did the variety of available specialties. By the early 2000s, similar programs developed for nurse practitioners and expanded rapidly. John, can you give us a current lay of the land as to how many residencies and fellowships are available for both physician assistants and nurse practitioners?
Sure, Mike. But I think that's a bit of a complicated question, and one we'll get into in a few more minutes. And part of that is that there's a lack of accreditation or centralized coordination for these programs. So it's not easy to determine exactly how many are currently operating. We do have the Association of Postgraduate PA Programs, which is the largest representative organization for PA residencies, and they have over 130 programs listed on their website at this moment. There's also the Association of Postgraduate APRN Programs and the Consortium for Advanced Practice Providers, which lists over 150 programs on their site. And many of these programs are combining PAs and NPs.
And I guess a follow-up question, since we're on a surgical podcast, do you have a sense of how many of these programs are specific to surgical education?
Potentially. Again, the lack of centralization makes it a bit challenging to get that exact number. But if you look at those same organizations I just mentioned, you can get an idea of what's out there. For example, the Association of Postgraduate PA Programs lists over 25 surgical programs, and the Consortium for Advanced Practice Providers lists over 30 programs. These numbers include all surgical programs, such as GenSurg, orthopedics, trauma, and the many other specialties and subspecialties that are out there.
So, John, you alluded to some changes in the way that these programs are organized and accredited. Can you elaborate a little bit on accreditation?
Yeah, the first thing is that's important to understand is that these training programs, when they pursue accreditation, it's entirely voluntary right now. And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon. Because programs have historically differed in their goals and objectives, it adds an additional layer of a challenge for creating some kind of standardization or universal curriculum. A very positive and recent development is a collaboration between ARCPA and ACEN, which is the Accreditation Committee for Education in Nursing. And these are the PA and NP accreditation bodies. And they're starting to partner and work more closely together to accredit joint APP residency programs for both PAs and NPs. And I think that's a huge barrier to overcome for those programs that cater to both providers. This collaboration has been in making for years, and I think it represents a step in the right direction for postgraduate training programs, as well as interprofessional practice for NPs and PAs in general.
I agree very much. I think it's a great step in the right direction for kind of showing what NPs and PAs do, and that we do a lot of the same work. And I think I really agree with you that it's a step forward, and I thank you for all that information. So I kind of think we did a good job of describing the background and organization of how these programs operate. But next, I want to discuss the structure and then get into why a candidate may choose to pursue this type of extra training. So Kim, I was wondering if you could give us some general information about how most of these fellowships provide this clinical training.
Yeah, sure thing. Keeping with that theme that John had of variability, there are definitely some differences in some of the programs that are administered, but there are a lot of similarities as well. Most of the programs are about 12 months long, some of them longer, and they're affiliated usually with a sponsoring institution. It's generally, but not always, an academic medical center. They can also be affiliated with the military or a community hospital. Most of the residencies include didactic material and lectures, and the amount of didactic material definitely varies. There's usually rotations in various surgical subspecialties and settings within surgery. So the residents will spend some time on the floor, some time in the ICU, and some time in the OR. Some programs admit one or two residents per year, and some admit a cohort as large as 12, which is pretty significant. The requirements vary between the programs, but it's generally accepted that you have to be a graduate of an accredited PA or NP program, licensed in the appropriate jurisdiction and state, and eligible to be credentialed at the facility. I think it's important for students to know that those things don't have to already be in place when they apply, but before they start practicing, that'll all need to get buttoned up. There's not published data describing admission rates right now, which I think is interesting and hopefully becomes clearer as accreditation furthers, but it's thought to be pretty competitive, even though there's no centralized application process.
So what about compensation and benefits? Are these training programs paid, unpaid, some combination?
Yeah. So universally, these are paid programs. There are no recent data that fully confirm this or that confirm how much the residents are being paid, but a lot of programs have the information on their individual websites. A quick look and unscientific look, I like to call it me-search instead of research, through the postgraduate PA program directory of surgical residency shows that a lot of the programs are paying somewhere between $60,000 and $70,000 per year. I found a couple of residencies that had some six-figure reimbursements, though, or stipends, which was, I thought, interesting given the comparison to $60,000 to $70,000. Most offer health, vision, and dental coverage and variable number of days off. And there's also a lot of variability in the other things that get reimbursed, your license, your DEA registration, things like that.
I appreciate your disclosure and observation that your observations were unscientific, and I may use the term me-search. I like that very much. Based on looking around from a few websites, we wouldn't want to generalize with regards to compensation, and each program is certainly different. But the pay seems kind of low, certainly lower than what I would expect a new grad to command in most geographic regions, certainly where I live and work. Other than the benefits and kind of the packages that you discussed, what other perks are there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Most programs give a resident up to 50 Category 1 CMEs throughout the year. They also may be eligible to have their ACLS and their BLS courses paid for or renewed. Previously, there had been some opportunities to earn college credit, and then there are a small number of pathways out there to earn a doctorate degree at the end of the residency program. Most circumstances, though, the credential that the resident receives is a certificate.
So that all sounds like a huge investment in time and even money in some cases. I'd like to talk a little more about the reasons why a person would want to consider a fellowship and make this investment. So, Hannah, I was wondering if you could talk a little about the real positives of APP residencies.
Absolutely. This is easy, as there are a lot of great reasons why a person would want to look at postgraduate clinical training. When you look at the PA and NP education as a whole, both models provide a very broad curriculum and produce clinicians who are essentially trained to be generalists. But current workforce data suggests that most APPs aren't working in generalist practices, but actually, like most of us or all of us on this podcast, are working in surgery or medical specialties. So some new grads may just be looking for a leg up in the job market, and a residency is certainly an excellent way to get that advantage. There's also data to suggest that residency graduates actually have a competitive advantage over others when they're applying for jobs, and they may even get on a path to higher pay after they get hired because of this extra training.
So, John and Hannah, as managers who have some say in the hiring process, do you feel like there's an advantage for residency graduates when you're looking at applications? So say you're like looking at two CVs and they look pretty similar in terms of experience and education, but one has done a residency in the field you're hiring for and one who is not. Who's on top of the pile?
The candidate who has done the residency is on the top of the pile for me personally. That additional year of experience that is focused solely on the specialty they're applying for is the game changer. I think it shows their dedication and their interest, and that ultimately leads to improved retention and a more efficient onboarding process into the position.
John, any thoughts as a manager?
Yes. So I think there absolutely is an advantage to completing a postgraduate training program. I find these APPs to be heavily invested in their professional development and the program, and that the program itself is accelerating that process. Completing a program is a powerful signal to me.
All right. So, Hannah, other than that competitive advantage in hiring, why else do you think would a person think hard about a fellowship? What are some personal reasons?
There really are a lot of compelling reasons a person would want to make this investment. I think there are three really important things that improve the success of a new grad in a new position. So the first being structure. And residencies really do a great job of providing a very structured approach to learning and gradually increasing the responsibilities and autonomy of the residents. The second, confidence. And graduates of residencies are more confident in their decision-making and their skills as a result of the intensive and structured training that they've received. And then third is mentorship. People in new jobs always do better with strong mentorship. And mentorship is something that you can find in residency, and it's exceptional in residency programs. It sets people up for success in the residency, in their first jobs, and in their careers. And having the strong mentorship builds them up to become strong mentors themselves.
That's great insight, Hannah. And I really strongly agree. And I think another great thing about these opportunities are the faculty. I would think in most cases, the faculty who are running and teaching in these residencies have kind of self-selected for these opportunities and doing it because they love it. They love teaching, they have expertise, and they want to share it. And I think that is meaningful. And I think that's not the case for every clinical rotation that you get in NP school and PA school in our training. And so, Kim, as an educator, what do you tell students who come to you for advice on fellowships?
Oof, that's a good one, and one that I get a lot. I think there are a couple of important angles to be considered. And I start with the pragmatic one when I talk to students. The truth is that regardless of why a student wants to go for a residency, some students cannot afford to do it because of the lower pay that's associated with most of them. So I'm pretty candid with the students about the variability in payment, and I encourage them to really research that before committing. If financial resources are not a concern, then I usually flip the question back to them and I explore with them what they want to get out of a residency. Like Hannah said, fellowships and residencies provide incredible structure and confidence. They can also help students who are a little bit uncertain about their path. A residency can be a good way to get more in-depth exposure to surgery or emergency medicine, for example, and just to really help a learner know if that's truly a career path that they want. For me, it feels like if a student invests in a residency, it's helping them determine whether this is going to be their job or whether this is going to be their career. So I'm also really honest with them about my own journey. When I ask them to consider their goals, I've worked in surgery for a long time now, not having done a residency. Have I had a fulfilling, successful career? Yes. Would I also be better rounded and have started off a lot more competent and more equipped for higher acuity situations if I had done a residency? Also, yes.
I'm in the exact same situation, Kim. I've been in neurosurgery a long time, and would I have benefited from a residency? Certainly, yes. Did I have to have one for my position? No, I didn't. So, I think making it a really personal decision for the student or the potential applicant is really important. Mm-hmm. So kind of switching gears a little bit, I want to take really full advantage of the unique perspective of one of our guests, John Messing, who previously founded and led a joint NPPA fellowship. And I want to pick his brain a little on curriculum and what a prospective applicant might look for in a fellowship as they consider different programs. So John, put you on the spot here a little bit. Can you share some very general information about the different ways a person who is considering a residency may evaluate different programs?
Sure, Mike. I have a lot of thoughts here, and I'm sure you know I'm not shy about sharing those. So if a person wants to make this investment, which is both one of time and money and all the other opportunity costs that go along with this path, they really want to know what they're getting themselves into and should be systematic about how they're evaluating these fellowships. A very straightforward way to start is by asking a past graduate about their experience with the program you're interested in. You may need to do a little bit of digging, see if you know anyone. Will the program provide a list, or do they publish their graduates? Are you able to find any on LinkedIn? And I think most people will be more than happy to share their experiences. Another very straightforward step in evaluation is looking at the website. Does it have all the information you need, such as start dates, pay, curriculum, who are the faculty, what's their experience, Are they accredited? Is that something that matters to you at this stage? And what does it offer and what does it limit? Is the information up to date? Because I personally think an updated website is a reflection of the administrative acumen of any organization, particularly if you're about to invest a year of your life in it. And then you might want to start getting into the nuance of the curriculum. What's that balance of didactic education? Are you responsible for any deliverables, such as teaching, giving a presentation? Do you have the opportunity to tailor your experience with particular electives, areas that might challenge you to grow? Some of these programs, they have a QI project or EBP project that's incorporated. And what's expected of you in that step? And what kind of supports do you get along the way? Start thinking about the technical components. Does a program describe how you're supported, trained, mentored? What about first assisting, these other technical skills? What kind of feedback are you getting? What's the cadence of that? Does the program have a structured framework for entrustability for specific technical activities and milestones to achieve your goals? We talked about pay. There are a number of other benefits that can be intangible. Exactly how much time off are you getting and how do you go about taking it? Do you get supports to go to a conference? If so, how much money, how much time do you get? Do you have access to a medical library or up-to-date and other resources? You also have to think about the duty hours, as this can really impact your quality of life during residency. You need to have a crystal clear understanding of those expectations around the hours, because it can be very demanding. This is a, like I mentioned earlier, it's a sacrifice investment in finances and in time, and much more than you would likely expect to work in your first position. Some, in fact, I think many programs, they describe it as modeling after resident work weeks, and they're consistent with ACGME requirements, which often come up to 80 hours per week with one day off out of every seven. And you may be rotating nights, weekends, holidays, which is time away from family when you're already working more. And often this is seen because you're taking that investment to get the additional training. So there are a lot of things to consider. And you want to be able to find a reliable program for that year that you're putting towards your professional development. I don't think you're going to find a perfect one, but there aren't always perfect PA or NP programs either. So you want to find one that's going to match your interests, your needs, and what you have ahead of you.
John, I think you made some really great points. And I want to talk a little bit more about the administrative support piece that you mentioned. So a website is like a window into the administrative capability of any organization. So is the website organized, informative, up to date? All valid and important questions. But I also think it's important not to get too concerned with the aesthetics. So a website is a communication tool, so we should evaluate it that way as well, and then continue to evaluate the other aspects of the program's communications with you as the candidate. I'm not suggesting that they respond to your calls and emails immediately, but how long does it take them to respond? How helpful are their resources, and what are their resources? Ask yourself how the administrative presence of the recruitment process may or may not translate into the administrative support that you will receive when you're actually in the program. I think about this when I'm hiring APPs in my department. While I'm evaluating the candidate by their CV and cover letter, they're also evaluating me and my organization throughout our communication.
That is really good stuff. I'm actually learning a ton just listening to the two of you. Something I want to add on is that, you know, I also advise my students to have a good understanding of the type and quantity of learners when they're headed in. And there might be PA and NP students, medical residents, medical students, fellows. And so it's interesting. On one hand, having a lot of other learners shows an organization's commitment and an investment in education itself, which is fantastic. But on the other hand, you could find yourself competing for learning opportunities. And I'm not saying that the presence of other learners is either a positive or a negative. I just think it's good to sort of know what you're walking into before you do it.
Excellent. So I think that's just terrific insight all around. And I'm like Kim, I'm learning here. And I'm sure our audience appreciates all these different perspectives. And so as we wrap up the chat, I want to go around the room and just give each of our panelists the opportunity to provide any final thoughts about APP residencies that maybe I didn't ask about, or just give kind of parting thoughts on the subject. So Hannah, I'll start with you.
Thanks, Mike. So as you've heard from this very experienced group of APPs, a residency program has many benefits to your future career and setting you up for success as a new provider. Dedicating a year of residency to a specialty is a big deal. So I would encourage those who feel confident in their future field of practice to seriously look into residency programs. If you're not set on a specialty and you're not really sure on your future career, then I'm not sure an APP residency would necessarily be the next step. I think there's a lot that you need to look into if it is going to be your next step, like Kim alluded to as well when she was talking in terms of the financial commitment and the salary differences. When you compare that with a PA or NP job right out of your physician assistant or nurse practitioner programs. I don't feel strongly that an APP residency is an absolute to finding and excelling in the right job for you. But as we've heard today, and even as I've learned from my cohorts here, is that it definitely has its advantages for those looking for that additional training and structure prior to joining the workforce as a new NP or PA.
Yeah. So good. A very, you know, personal decision, one that somebody has to think hard about themselves. So thanks, Hannah, for that. So Kim, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think in summary, residency programs are an incredible way to further baseline training. And I think we all agree that the decision to attend a postgraduate program is really nuanced and it's really personal. And the reasons for each student are going to be unique. Be clear about the undertaking before going in and be clear about your why as you head into a residency program. It's also it's important that you find a program that aligns with your goals, like John was alluding to, so that you're a good fit for the program and so that it's also a good fit for you. Again, I'm really interested to see how the landscape changes moving forward with respect to accreditation. I can see the benefits of it. It's albeit an intense process from what I've heard, but the benefits of creating consistency among programs and also making data more tangible are kind of exciting prospects.
Well, thank you, Kim. So, John, take us home. What are your parting thoughts on postgraduate training for NPs and BAs?
So these programs are about the APPs extending their training, but they're also about the program offering it. Many of them got into the business because they saw the need, made that business case, and implemented it to benefit the new hires, their patients, their teams, and the organization. Yes, you may opt for one of these programs to advance your career, and I think this is often a wise move, but remember that these programs have a vested interest in the success as well. Whether that's a better pipeline of trained candidates, closing the gap on some training needs, a retention strategy with postgraduate commitments, or some other need, know that it's a mutual exchange, but one that should truly benefit you as a clinician as well.
Thank you for that insight, John. I think that's helpful, as was everybody else's final thoughts there. And that will do it for today. I want to thank our panelists for participating in this, I think, meaningful and really timely discussion as things are changing rapidly. And I'd like to thank Behind the Knife for their hosting and production and their enthusiasm for educating APPs. Until next time, I am Michael Johnson, and thank you for tuning in.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.